And now, the Sustainable Hour, proudly brought to you by City to Surf Solar Plus.
And what a sustainable week we have had. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Mick.
How are you going?
Yeah, going well.
Yeah,
going
and well. Lots of action. Divestment day on Saturday, and on the same day, all this stuff with the Pacific Warriors. And you have been out there with them. Just came back this morning, is that right?
Yeah. Well, yesterday we were at Anglesey, showing the two. We had a lady from Ragina from Samoa, and Mika from Tokelau, and yeah, they wanted to go and see the coal mine that directly impacts on the connection between why they're here, their lifestyles back home. So it was good. And then this morning there were probably 80 to 100 people that have occupied the ANZ Bank in Melbourne, directly giving a message that that they should stop, that there's a connection between them funding fossil fuel projects to the tune of $6.75 billion, I think it is, and their livelihood back home,
which
so
is
exactly very powerful, very very powerful,
exactly what the divestment day was about.
Yep.
And there's a beautiful video out. Beautiful, I say that because I was part of it. I think it's really, it's a good video in the sense that it shows the action in all sorts of cities around. But you know what, we'll come back to all the divestment talk in the end of the program, as we usually do.
Yep, solutions.
We will come back to the climate warriors as well. I think we should begin this Sustainable Hour with talking about something hands-on, something that we can do when we talk about climate change. You know, we're always looking for some more concrete advice on how we take action in our daily day on climate change and how we reduce the so-called carbon footprint. And today we're lucky to have Heidi Fu. Welcome to you, Heidi.
Thank you very much.
In the studio, you work with Balanced Sustainability, which is a company that is doing all sorts of good stuff with energy efficiency. Is that right?
Yes, I'll probably explain who I am to your listeners first, because I'm not really green, I'm just normal, and what I do is normal. On a personal sense, I do our household use between 4 and 5 kilowatt hour per day, which is half the national average of a single person household, and we're 3 people in our household. Our last bill was 12,000 litres of water. I just ran out, the tanks just ran out this morning. Our garden is, got a veggie garden, which is 40 square metres, and when it comes to waste, I do 24 bins a year, which is it's a lot smaller than most people. I do that because it makes financial sense. Electricity keeps going up. Between 2008 and 12, it increased 82%. And because I keep it low, I don't get hit so hard that some households will do. And because I keep it low, I can actually afford a green product from my electricity company. And last time I got a bill, that green product cost me an extra $21.
Hmm. And when you say green product, what it means actually is that the power that you get, the electricity, is generated by a wind turbine or hydro or something?
That is a wind turbine.
Okay.
My roof is very old, so I can't. I don't want to put solar panels on there yet. So, but still, when I got it that low, financially, really couldn't afford pay to put solar panels on. And for your listeners, I refuse to be cold, so I don't actually save on heating, but the house saves heating for me, because every year I make sure that I insulate one room per year. I don't do everything in one heat, because I couldn't afford that. But over the last 6 years, I've improved the comfort of the house, so that when I improved the living room, I saved about 23% on my gas bill.
That's a good message for people.
That's just personal.
It's a good message for people, bit by bit.
Yeah,
doing
bit by
it
bit.
Doesn't
don't,
have to
don't
be
do everything. That's why people break their neck, because they try to do everything this year. And that's personal and a lot of companies.
So in doing that, you've saved money, you feel, as well as you've got fewer emissions.
That's correct.
Yeah?
Yeah. Makes me happy at the end
of the day.
Makes sense.
Yes.
I've got my own business, which is Mix It Balance Sustainability. I've been at Deakin working with greenhouse gas analyzer equipment. Very long story, so I won't talk about that today. But to do energy audits for school in Geelong. Hope to be invited back on this show to talk about that at a later stage.
And when you say energy audits, what's that?
I calculate the amount of energy that is being used by a particular building at that school. So I divide the energy up so that they can see they might have 7 different buildings at the school. And then I give them an overview of where most of their energy is being consumed at the school. I give them a list of actions with cost on how much it will cost to and how much that will bring their energy consumption down.
That's what are we talking about? What's the figures that you usually tell people, you know, when you do an audit?
Okay. I go into childcare centres a lot, and I'll get back to this is why I'm here. I'm going to talk about what I do for childcare centres.
Yes.
I go into childcare centres, and often just by walking through just to see the premises, I can sometimes in half an hour change their bill of 25%, and that's without doing an energy audit. By going through the same types of premises, I know the equipment that they've got, and I know how much the equipment uses per day and therefore per year, and I give them recommendations. If I do an energy audit for them, it's very detailed.
So 25%.
25%.
At the same time,
that's just me walking through the premises.
Yep.
We hear the politicians debating whether we should be cutting 5%.
Yes.
Until 2020, and here you're talking about what 25% just like that at
that's
once.
Just yep. Like that. I think that we're not here to talk about that, but because I like to talk about the two
yes.
particular programs that I run. But if the listener goes to Lindsay Fox. Lindsay Fox, I don't know him personally, but he has made a bold statement, and he wanted to save 50% on emissions. And the latest figures on his website is that in 2012, they had come to an emission reduction of 36%. And we all know what Lindsay Fox does. So if he can do it, anybody else can do it as well.
Mm. Yep.
So that's the industry. So it's not about where you're voting. It's like it makes financial sense to review your carbon emission.
And is that sort of your driver, that you actually save people money?
Absolutely. That is number one driver. That is number one driver always. Because that's what appeals to companies. Like you get hospitals. Their main purpose is that any dollar that comes into the hospital should be used for the patient. They really need to look at their energy efficiency to cut energy efficiency so that more money from that $1 goes to the patient.
Yeah. And up to a third can be knocked off the top with energy efficiency
Absolutely.
Just by itself.
Absolutely.
So yeah. With the kindergartens and schools which you are going out to do these energy audits, is there also an educational aspect for the kids in some way? Do you involve them
or should
they be involved?
I run the program called Small Green Steps. Well, I'm the agent in Victoria. Small Green Steps is a national program that's specifically tailored for the early childhood development sector. That was developed a couple of years ago with federal government funding. It has got to do with the core of that is to embed sustainability across the centre so that the centre become accredited towards their national quality standards. And they're like childcare centres and kindergartens has got so many standards in order to open the door every single day for the children, and you know, like without the standards, families wouldn't take their children there. So there's some standards that are more important. Like health and safety of the children is more important than environmental objectives. But if you want to be an industry leader in your field, that's what you need to. That's a couple of the boxes that you need to get ticked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because this is something that strikes me that people don't see it as a responsibility in some way as parents to take. You know, what kind of planet is we leave for these children to take over? You know, it should be part of the upbringing. It should be sort of in the curriculum of any institution, in my opinion.
I think I can see, I've got a personal example of a very good childcare centre here where my children are going and have gone. My son's finished and my daughter's now in kinder there. And I ran a workshop for this particular kinder in January. and the change and the implementation of environmental activities for the children. You can see it. And it's written, it's said, so they put action where the words are.
Exactly.
Which is fantastic. So with the workshops, again, I'll run through how to engage staff. I go through a lot of energy management. That topic is massive. The amount of actions that you can take in that area range from being absolute free activities to quite expensive. But a lot of the activities within that are free. And you can get the children on board on, you know, how to save energy and save water. A lot of the childcare centres have got veggie gardens or they've got recycled bins that they talk about what to do with the children's. I think it's important that, the result of the activities or the workshop that I run is providing an understanding between staff and management. So management has got an online version of the small green steps, and I run the support so that management and staff on the same page, and yes, this staff can express what they're passionate about, and the management can make sure that they harvest the passion of their staff. And what I do as well is that childcare centres never have any money, so I make sure that if there's a possibility, I combine the childcare centres in workshops so that I might have 20 staff from each centre, and that's an opportunity for networking for the centres as well, which is not something that they get to do very often. I'm not sure if I can just read up a quote that a couple of centres have given me. One is from the centre director in Belmont, City Learning and Care. She said, "I really enjoyed the presentation. It was very thought-provoking and gave me new direction." Another one is the childcare coordinator from the City of Greater Geelong, saying that the teams that attended have all taken elements of the training provided and used them in their day-to-day routines. The training was extremely well received and enjoyed. And that's super, and I can see the result of that because I still go then. And I have recently, well, just to round this one off, is that if anybody would like to hear more about Small Green Steps, go to www.smallgreen.com.au. And if I can go straight into the next program, Meg and Tony, if you're happy.
Yeah, you're on a roll.
Because
keep going.
I have just this week talked with some of the centres that I've run workshops with, because I run another program that involves the families that goes to these childcare centres. It's a program.
In their own homes.
That's right. So I've asked childcare centres to advertise for this next program that I'm going to talk about. It's a program that I'm involved in that's been developed by Environment Victoria. Environment Victoria is a non-government, not-for-profit organisation, and it's a program called Future Powered Families. It's a program that's been around for a year and a half, or a year. It was developed with federal government funding. It's been extended until next year. It has so far given visits to 1,500 households, and there's an expectation that each household will be able to, of course, save money, but also save about 2 tons of emission per year.
Terrific.
Which is just fantastic.
It is.
So there's a lot
so
of...
That each, so just each, get it
household,
right, each household,
each household, two tons.
It's amazing.
So saving money, it is fantastic. It's not selling the households anything.
Yep.
It is just providing good tips and ideas. And there's about 15 different topics that's, well, in this case, it's me.
Yep.
In the future, hopefully, it will be more, because if you've had a visit from me, you can contact Environment Victoria.
Okay.
And then you can come on the training and be a house assessor yourself.
Terrific.
So it's also upskilling people.
Yep. There's employment there for
there's employment
them?
There.
Yeah.
Well, it's not employment as such. It's more kind of a skill.
It will be. I think with those skills, that will bring employment for them down the track.
Down the track, but with Environment Victoria, it is it's a voluntary role.
Yep.
it's more empowering the people that you go to. There's a couple of parameters to be eligible for this particular program. So it's low-income family. I wouldn't really call it that low because the bracket has been set to $78,000. A lot of families in Geelong earns a lot less than that.
It's about, so how much is it?
$78,000.
For the whole household.
For the household. Yeah. But there's another one which is, so it must be young families. So yes. The oldest child must be less than three,
yep.
Or three or less.
Yep.
Or you need a healthcare card or a concession card.
Okay.
So that's something very concrete. What do people do, those who have heard this, you telling them this, and where do they go? What's the next step?
Okay, they give me a call. My name's Heidi. You give me a call on 0400 84 6566, or send me an email, heidi@balancedsustainability.com.au, or you turn up to sustainability drinks at Bees Bar tonight because I'll be presenting.
Okay.
And I'll have a couple of minutes at the end of the session.
Yes.
So be there between 5:30 and 7:30.
And this is an event in Little Mallop Street in
Little Mallop Street in at Bees Bar.
Yeah,
and there's a couple of speakers there talking about food. And food security tonight.
Is that the free entry or?
Free entry. Oh, gold coin donation.
Okay.
So, yeah, so.
Excellent.
The families, are they given, so if there's measures they need to take to reduce their emissions, are they given support? Are they. Light bulbs or whatever?
There's a reference to a company that will do that for them if they're interested.
Yep.
I won't do
at
that.
At no cost to them?
At no cost to them.
Okay, yeah, good.
And
that's part. So that's part of the whole program.
That's right.
That's one of the wiser things the federal government's doing.
That's
I haven't
right.
seen too many
that's
others.
Right. this is a good program. It's developed with the past federal government, and it's been supported with the current federal
yep.
government. If the listener would like to hear more information and can't make it to Bees Bar tonight, go to environmentvictoria.org.au/FPF/homevisits. The households are also getting a phone call in 6 to 9 months out of the
follow-up.
Yep. The household will pass on the account details so that this program is monitored by Swinburne University, Department of Industry and CSIRO, because we all want that these kind of initiatives are being looked at and reviewed and improved so that the low-income families get the best support so that they can minimise their annual expense on utility bills.
Fantastic. Heidi Fo, thank you very much for coming to our studio. It was great to meet you and to hear that there are people in Geelong who are going around and making this miracle happen, saving 25 to 30% of your energy bills just like that, just by having assessed, making what you call an energy audit. That's amazing. And there must be a lot of kindergartens, a lot of schools, and a lot of families who would want to be part of that program that you're running there. So all the best of luck to you.
Thank you very much.
And we hope you'll get a lot of phone calls after we have promoted you here. So if you want to get in touch with Heidi Fo, I'll say that number one more time. You just call 0400 846 566. So
the big thing about that is management, it seems prior to this, they just would have just, the bill, electricity bill just came in, they paid it. And now that they can measure it, that they can see that the folly of that. Yeah,
have I got 2 seconds?
Yes, of course.
Recently I changed from the CFL, which is the curly bulb, to LED, and that gave me a decrease in lighting of between 33 and 82% in my household. So that's going from the CFL, which everybody's talking about is energy efficient. If you're going from an incandescent, which is the old-fashioned one that you cannot buy anymore in the shops, luckily, then I think consider going to LED if you're happy with
and can you get these in a normal supermarket, or do you have to go a special place for them?
Oh, I went to a special place in that sells LED. But it's open. This is a store that sells to electrician, but it's open for the public.
Yeah, and some of them are available.
I went to the one in Gordon Avenue.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some are available at supermarkets. I guess some LEDs are. Mm. But yeah, it's better probably better going to a specialist place. They get better advice there.
Thank you very much. We would all like to save some money, I think, on our power bills. So here you go. This was great advice. We'll put links out as well on our homepage, which is climatesafety.info. And we have a Facebook page. If you just look for the Sustainable Hour in Facebook, we'll put the links out to Heidi Fogh's various projects there. Thank you for coming, Heidi.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Heidi.
The Sustainable Hour, proudly brought to you by City to Surf Solar Plus.
So, Tony, tell me what happened this morning, because you came back from Melbourne and you look all, again, fired up in a zero-carbon kind of way. climate warriors are everywhere on Facebook at the moment. There was so much happening yesterday.
Yeah.
Occupations of offices in Sydney, in Perth, and in Melbourne this morning then.
Yeah, well, this morning it was at the ANZ head office.
So what's that occupation idea?
Well, it's just the Pacific Warriors are just saying we're not drowning, we're fighting. If we join the dots from our addiction to fossil fuels, they're at the end of it. And they're watching their low-lying countries, and they're watching the ocean rise. And it's affecting all aspects of their life, and they're saying we're not going to, it's not fair, we haven't contributed to that one little bit. So there would have been, I don't know, I'm hopeless with numbers, but I imagine about 100 people. So they were in a circle of Mika, who's from Tokelau, and Aaron, who's an organiser from 350.org. And then around them, there would have been half a dozen people that are locked onto PVC pipe and through that. And
so
then,
that the police can't move them,
is
that the point?
Effectively. And then there are other concentric circles around that, and probably up to 50, 60 people in there. And I was, was one of the hardest things I did was to walk away from that, but I knew I'd get killed if I didn't make it back here.
We're happy you made it back.
Yeah, and made it in a bit of time, but it's just so powerful watching Mika do his version of the haka. I'm sure that'll be online somewhere. Just people have got to see it. It's just, I won't say any more. It's just humbling to see it. And Aaron was with him from 350, and then people got up and told their story. So we had a student, we had a doctor, medical doctor, getting up and talking about why they were there. And it was done in a really interesting way. It's called the human microphone. So you'd say a phrase, the person would be telling their story, and then everyone out would chant the same words. Very, very powerful. And it's talking about why they're there. The doctor was saying that, talking about the health impacts, which we've mentioned a number of times in the past. There was a student talking about her future of her kids, what that was going to be like. There were people talking about how ashamed they were to be Australian at the moment because of what our government's doing, but how proud to be with that circle of people this morning. And just probably between the oldest and the youngest, 40 years, so a couple of generations of people there.
I just wanted to put in here that there's a new interesting report that has come out with the simple title, Impacts of Climate Change on Public Health in Australia.
Yeah.
Just came out here a couple of days ago, published by something called the Deeble Institute for Health Policy Research. So we'll put a link out to that one as well if people want to see some academic research in this field of, as you mentioned, about health.
Yeah, more and more doctors are becoming involved and saying they see this as a public health issue, and they're being negligent in a way if they don't get involved. And that's difficult for doctors because their training is all about not being political, and someone will say straight away, oh, you're being political if you get involved in this. And their answer is, no, I'm not. I'm here to protect people's lives. That's what I train for. I can't sit back and watch this happen.
It's interesting or strange in a way that the governments don't see it as their role to protect people. But we'll come back to that a little bit. I think our listeners should have a chance to meet Mika, because you met him yesterday. You were out in Anglesey with him. Mm. And you had your phone out and you did a short little interview with him. Here he is. Explain to you why he's concerned about coal.
It concerns us because coal plays a big part in causing of climate change, you know, burning of coal, you know, and with the releases of all this carbon dioxide into the air and all these bad other chemicals in the air, and it's bad, you know, and causes the global warming. So a big concern to us, because the global warming causes Arctic to melt the ice, and it causes the sea level water rise. You know, and we are only 2 to 3 meters above water, and our land is the most dearest thing to us, and is threatened by the impact of climate change.
Are there impacts already on your island?
Yeah, heaps of them. The major ones is that we face like droughts, you know, and we were not. You know, like no one expected it, you know, because for a long time we had, you know, rainy season, during the rainy season and dry season, but now the weather patterns totally changed also. So we're not ready about that, which is, you know, the normal rainy season and then the dry season, but now it's totally different. And that causes a lot of stress to the people, because our water supply is directly from the rainwater. We don't have rivers, we don't have lakes. So droughts gives stress to the people. It's really, like, it destroys a lot of our crops, destroys our coconuts. So coconuts is our tree of life, and we live with it, and we live from it. And it you know, during the drought, it destroys it. And the impact also threaten our food security, you know, our soil, salt intrusion into the soil that makes it harder for crops to grow.
So what's the connection between that and the coal in Newcastle?
Burning coal and using coal is bad, you know, it's emissions rate, you know, it causes Australia is increasing their emissions. And Australia increases their emissions, and the world is not helping to decrease their emissions. It's just like everybody is just on a competition who burns the more, who emitted the more carbon dioxide. And for us, knowing that they know that, it really disturbs us. It's, why would human do that? What the Prime Minister has said, it's saddening us, you know, because we know that coal is not good for humanity. We know that. We see that every day in our lives. It's selfish, you know, especially like we are Australia and the Pacific, like we're all in the same ocean. And I know that, you know, if 99% of the world knows that global warming is caused by emissions, you know, I don't understand why would a government does not accept that that is the truth.
And we are some people here in Geelong who also don't understand that. Isn't that true, Tony?
It sure is.
I noticed he talked about drought rather than sea level rise, which I thought was, you know, their main concern. But it's actually the crops, yep, and the problem with farming. And hello, Geelong Advertiser, our leading newspaper yesterday, on the front cover, what do we have? A farmer sitting there with his dry soil and the headline, Drought Fears for Farmers. But not a word about climate change. In that article, as far as I can see, I haven't read the whole article, I must say, but generally in Australia, for instance, just a week ago or so, there was the biggest storm of 100 years and so on in New South Wales.
Yep.
Again, not a word about climate change.
Straight to
everyone's
Sydney.
Talking about the bushfires now, the season is starting earlier than ever. Not a word about climate change. Mm. It goes on and on. And now we have actually, the figures are coming in from scientists saying that the Earth now is actually warming faster than ever. It looks like that 2014 is going to be the hottest year ever. That's the headlines that are out there in The Guardian. Every newspaper you can mention internationally almost is having these news now, because the meteorologists are saying that, you know, global heat is here. September, for instance, was the hottest month measured ever.
So it's like playing Russian roulette with the weather, really.
Well, and at the same time, we have a prime minister saying, as Mika was quoting, that coal is good for humanity. Something is strange. Anyway, we have good people in our area and people who are doing things at the practical level, but also at the sort of more philosophical level. And this brings us on to say welcome to Graeme Stockton, who is organizing an event which I think it looks like an ambitious event with some very renowned speakers coming to Torquay. Welcome to the studio.
Thanks, man.
First of all, Graeme.
Graeme, no problem.
The headline is not about climate change, but I feel that that's maybe the underlying reason why you are organizing this. The headline says, growth is bigger, better.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Mick. I guess all of us are now aware of climate change as a driving issue for life on Earth, but we don't actually appreciate the second big issue, which is population on the planet and how that's having such a big impact on life on Earth as well. So to put it in context, even back in 1960, the early 1960s, when I was born, there were only 3 billion people on the planet. And now, here I am in my 50s, and there are 7 billion people on the planet. So if you want to make some comparisons here, think about... here's a good quote. 70% of all the planet's life forms have disappeared since 1970. And the big problem is that those life forms have disappeared ostensibly as a result of habitat clearing and overpopulation, overuse of renewable resources and squandering the use of non-renewable resources. And what that means is that regardless or independent of climate change, we've seen scientists calling this age the sixth mass extinction on planet Earth. If you look at it closely, climate change is responsible for about 1% of those disappearances up to date. But as we move forward, we all know that climate change is going to be the big double whammy and will be responsible for a lot more. So you've got to ask yourself, what has been responsible for all those extinctions and for this being called the sixth mass extinction event on planet Earth? And it's the result of human population and our whole economic system based on growth.
Because that is sort of built into any politician's speech, also here up to the election. You see the headlines in the newspapers constantly about that they think that this is something they have to say. I mean, they must actually believe it, don't you think, that growth is going to get them elected. If they can show that there will be growth in Geelong and growth in Torquay and so on, then people will vote for them.
Yeah, well, I think...
And it seems to work, or what? I mean... And that's what you want to question?
I essentially want to question the physical growth nature. I think it's all fine to... In this 21st century, we've been using a 20th century toolbox, and it's worked really well for us now, but we're in the 21st century, and that toolbox just absolutely isn't going to work. So the reliance on fossil fuels, for instance, great for cheap energy, but now we've got new problems. In right up till the pretty much the end of the 20th century, we kind of had an empty world as far as people were concerned. But exponential growth being what it is, it keeps doubling very quickly. And so we no longer have an empty world in which the resources, the planet's resources, can be seen as limitless. In response to the limitations in the past, it was always about maximising the extraction method, okay? And we've done that really well, with whether it be through fishing fleets or through, big machinery to dig out coal. But now the balance has changed, and those resources aren't limitless anymore, and many of them are down to less than, 5%. So the limitation now is the actual natural resources that are out there in the world. And if we're actually going to tackle climate change, we actually also need to think about population. And the good news is that there are countries around the world that have done this really successfully. People always seem to point to China as the classic example, but it's by far not the best one. Places like Thailand have explicitly dealt with the issue of poverty by providing free family planning services in the same way that here in Australia we do the same. And at the same time, they've been very good at tackling the issue of species disappearance as well. So they both go hand in hand.
So tell me then about this event that you're organising on the 16th of November. in Torquay. What are your hopes in terms of, I mean, these are very big questions. A single event can't stop population growth in itself. So what are your hopes?
Well, there's been two independent bodies in Australia that have both come to the conclusion that Australia's population shouldn't actually go past 23 million. For our own well-being, it shouldn't go past 23 million. If we go back to about the 1970s, 1980s, when immigration was set at about 70,000 people, that's the sort of figure that, if we went back to that figure now, we could actually stabilise Australia's population. So it's not about stopping population growth. It's about being a little bit smart about how we manage it. And if you look at a place like Torquay, there's an optimal scale of growth beyond which benefits to residents, visitors and nature declines. So the logical response to that is a permanent growth boundary around Torquay, Janjuk, Belbray as a logical response to the limits of growth on a finite planet. So we can start locally by actually starting to set up some of those parameters and keeping in mind that all of us are the beneficiaries of actually setting those limits. And if we want nature in our lives in the future, we're just absolutely going to have to do that.
Yep. So it's working out what is the carrying capacity? Is that
exactly
is that what we're talking about?
Yep.
What can this land support?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think a good example of nature disappearing in our own backyard is the hooded plover. So the hooded plover has its critical nesting habitat above the high tide mark on the beaches. So it digs out a little scrape and makes that nest above the high tide mark. Its critical nesting period is late spring and through to summer, which is exactly the same time when all the people converge onto the beaches. So it's no surprise that the hooded plover's populations are plummeting. And in Geelong, for instance, our answer to that has been to pile on another 250,000 people with all the projections that, and all the urban sprawl that they're doing. So the chances of the hooded plover continuing to exist in our own local area are pretty small, really, if we continue on our current trajectory. So Emeritus Professor Ian Lowe is going to talk about those big issues. I'm just the messenger here, and the message is there is a big problem and we need to think about that. He actually has written a book on this whole issue, and him and other speakers around or thinkers around the world have put a lot of effort into thinking about, well, if we don't do what we're doing now, what are the alternatives? So there's people like Peter Victor in Canada, Tim Jackson in the UK. There's people like Herman Daly, who's the former chief economist of the World Bank, and Jeffrey Sachs. And then you've got Ian Lowe here in Australia talking about these issues.
So these are big names in some way, world-famous people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do they have is there a name for their group?
No, they're not actually even a part of a group. They're just they're just working independently and can see the writing on the wall that what we've got now is absolutely not going to work. And climate change is a manifestation of that.
Yes.
Human-induced climate change. More people, more consumption means less nature. So David Karoly, who's the second speaker, Professor David Karoly, who's the lead author with the Intergovernmental Panel for Climate Change, he's going to talk about that issue, where we're at with climate change, and then he's also going to introduce that whole thing about us here in the Surf Coast Shire and what the Anglesey coal mine means in response to that. And then we've got Jeff Carr, who's a senior botanist with Ecology Australia and is intimately versed with all the local flora across the Surf Coast and the Bellarine Peninsula and has seen it in decline over the last 40 years. And he just wants to, I guess, let people become more aware of just what we're losing and how that is actually a microcosm of what's happening globally.
Well, they're so impressive, those three.
Yeah. So if people want to come to this event, what's the next step?
The event's free, and I probably should at this stage tell everyone the date. It's Sunday, 16th of November, and the actual forum goes from 2 to 5:30 p.m. and it's at the Quicksilver Auditorium in Torquay. But I should also say that we have an art exhibition running by our local celebrated artist Mark Trinham, and he's going to have 60 of our local wildlife as an art exhibition in the foyer, so people are welcome to come from 1 o'clock on and have a look at that. And that's really just trying to get people to see that these are all the things that we've got in our own backyard. We should be aware of it, and we should be doing something to look after their future as well.
Mark does an amazing job on those. He's such a true artist in terms of it's so realistic, the creatures that he creates there.
Yeah, well, Mark is unfortunately, from a selfish point of view, talented in so many ways that I'm not.
Fantastic. Yeah, he wouldn't put on a gig like this, though, I'd say. He'd be doing that. This is a real credit to you, Graham, that what you've... I know personally that you've spent the hours that you've spent on this and the money that you've put into it yourself. It's a real credit to you, and it's going to be...
We will keep advertising it. We still have some weeks to come. It's coming up. It will be close to the election as well, the 16th of November.
I noticed down the bottom you've got a section there about the state election.
So there's a big error on my behalf not to mention that, but there are candidates. There's a Q&A for all the candidates for the South Barwon region. So for something like the Anglesey coal mine, for instance, which sits within the Surf Coast Shire and within the South Barwon region, I believe a lot of the people within the South Barwon region will want to know what their position is on the Anglesey coal mine.
Yeah, of course.
It's not a ward issue, it's a state issue. Yeah. And I think that will be a really important draw card for people to come along.
I think that's Micah showed the other day it's also an international issue.
Yeah.
The emissions, I think that's what people... It's not just Anglesey that the emissions don't stop at the boundary of Anglesey.
Yeah.
They keep blowing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... It is certainly a surf coast, the whole of the surf coast issue.
Yeah, I think I've just pulled up a little quote here from the UN Refugee Agency Chief Antonio Guterres on the 3rd of October 2014. And I guess he sums it up in a way. He says, "The impacts of climate change, of food insecurity, of water scarcity, of the multiplication of natural disasters combined with population growth and urbanisation and their impacts on the global environment, all this is making humanitarian needs grow in a dramatic way." So we're at a crossroad, I think. We have a choice here at the start of this 21st century to actually tackle the problems. I don't think we've been very good at that up till now. For Torquay, where it's a part of the Surf Coast Shire, and we're almost lucky because the Surf Coast Shire has urban growth boundaries around Aries Inlet, Anglesey and Lawn, which gets us off to a good start. The big fly in the ointment is Torquay, where it's just continuing to expand. And if you look at the Surf Coast Shire, we've still got lots of nature left in our backyard, and that's why people come down. If you look at, in comparison, the city of Greater Geelong, it's got less than 4% of its remnant vegetation left. And then, as I say, they're doing a huge urban sprawl project. And if you think about balance, how can less than 4% be a balance in this whole equation?
Yeah. Is there any reason, Graham, why Torquay would be... It doesn't have the limits that the others have on it? Is that a historical thing?
No. Torquay was designated as a growth zone in the 1970s, and the obvious response to that is that it's grown and grown and grown and then some, and now it's time to think about, where are the boundaries to that?
Fair question.
Yeah. And should we actually value all the agricultural land around us, and, as I say, nature, or should we just continue to keep creeping out and eventually merge with Geelong? Well, I don't think there's many people that would say that's a good idea, but that's exactly what we're doing.
Getting closer and closer.
That's something we'll hear more about on the 16th of November, when the candidates as well will be debating these issues. Thank you very much for coming, Graeme Stockton, here to the Sustainable Hour. It was a pleasure.
Thanks, Tony.
Just one last thing, Graeme, on that. What response have you got from the candidates?
All the candidates are coming, It's going to be good.
Terrific. Okay.
The Sustainable Hour. Proudly brought to you by City to Surf Solar Plus.
So, time flies in the Sustainable Hour, it always does, and if you want to know all the things that we didn't have time to tell you about, then go to our homepage, which is www.climatesafety.info. Typically we put out videos, stories of all the things that we just mention here briefly, but where you can actually dig much deeper if you follow the links that we're putting out. I would like to just quickly mention that we talked about that this afternoon at 5:30 there's an event at Beef's Bar, the monthly green drinks organized by Geelong Sustainability, which is worth taking part in. Today it's about local food as the theme. And next Wednesday, there's an event happening in Pakenham Street at the Barking Dog called The Philosophy and Psychology Behind Moral Attitudes to Climate Change. So there's the climate change actually being debated in an event on next Wednesday. We'll put a link out to that. And then, of course, there was this growth forum in Torquay on the 16th of November. And we'll keep putting these the links out, especially on our Facebook page, as they come in, because there's so much going on all the time.
From all different angles.
Exactly. Yeah. And while rounding off, I just wanted to mention on the divestment side that it was really good news this week that Sweden's, is something called the second AP fund, has divested $116 million from fossil fuel companies. And because that's the first national pension fund in the world that's done that. So the divestment movement is really spreading. It keeps coming. And another good news is that there will be a global divestment day. So if you weren't part of it this year or this Saturday, there will be another chance in February to join these hundreds of people who are moving their money away from the superannuation and from the bank accounts over to places that don't invest in fossil fuels. It's a very constructive statement to make, and it feels good, I can tell you. I did it last Saturday. It really, you get a good feeling about it. I can recommend it. Also, there's a website where you can check out whether your bank is funding fossil fuels and how much and so on. It's called superswitch.org.au. So go to that site and find out what's happening. I also just wanted to mention, hey, Denmark was covered 100% by wind energy this weekend. So don't say it's not possible.
Yeah.
This was 100%. I know it's not all the time, but a whole weekend, there's a country there with 5 million people, the size like similar to Victoria, which is 100% powered by wind energy. Still, here in Victoria, we have a way to go with building these wind turbines.
And Lars Agard, the CEO of Danish Energy Association, I like this. It might be a good quote to just about finish on. There is only one train, and that is the green train. If you're not on that train, you'll be left behind at the station or at the platform.
That's it. Said Tony here in the Sustainable Hour, and thank you, and see you next week, says Mikael.
Get on your mic, and giddy up.
End of the day, I'm responsible.
You invest in fossil fuels.
Divested like it's hot. Divested like it's hot. Divested like it's hot.
If big oil tries to get a chip,
park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot. Park it like it's hot.
And if a business get an attitude,
drop them like it's hot. Drop them like it's hot. Drop them like it's hot.
I got McKibben on the phone and I'm gonna protest.
Gotta stop climate change.
You know it's time to divest.
National Radio News.